Shanti. I think it's very pretentious to talk about secrets when Baba is the revealer of all the secrets. So I don't know how many secrets there are, but all of us find a lot of logic in Baba's explanation of time. And those that have not been around the cycle will probably have difficulty in understanding time as a cycle. But one of the ways that I found useful to explain to others and therefore explain to ourselves is the fact that everything that exists in this moment in the whole universe, if we wait 10 seconds, the same things will continue to exist. Things may have changed their place in time and space, change their form maybe, but everything that exists continues to exist. And that's always been a bit of a dilemma for people trying to understand time. I know the Greeks had two gods for time. One was called Kronos, and therefore, you know, the chronology, all of those things to deal with measured time, and Kairos, which was the quality time. So one was quantity, the other one was quality. So you could have an experience in a moment that was so intense and so deep, so rich, that was worth all of the other moments in your life, maybe. One deep moment of experience of meditation has that sort of quality to it. So people are very much slaves of Kronos, you know, the god of, you know, clocks, perhaps. The god of the clocks. And we've forgotten maybe to have deep, make the most of things in the short time that we have. We come to Madhubam for 2 weeks. It has a sort of a strange feel to it, those 2 weeks. If we've been here many times, it seems like we've never left. When you come back here and you see the same familiar things, you feel, wow, what happened in between? Do you have that sensation? Yeah. Where was I the rest of the year? It's sort of the blur of movement. And how much was I aware of the infinite nature of time itself? So most people have less difficulty of understanding a time without end. Like time going forward, it seems like will go on forever. Most people, though, will have more difficulty to understand that time, for the very same reason, has no beginning. It didn't start. So the only, you know, one of the best explanations is the cycle. That it moves in a cyclic manner. Recently I was talking with a Chinese doctor in Peru, a couple of years ago actually. He's probably the best known Chinese doctor in that country. And he's a contact of the center, so he came for lunch. And I was asking him how the Chinese understood cancer. He said, yes, we recognize what you in the West call cancer, though we describe it differently. It's a sort of imbalance of the energy that flows through the body. The chi or the ki or the prana here in India. And he said he's never seen anyone get over cancer who really wasn't able to rebalance the energies. And it could be due to psychological, physiological, environmental, diet, all sorts of things could be contributing to it. And especially the anxiety of the person. So they recognize what we call cancer, they treat it and they cure it without actually using the word cancer. Because it's a different way of seeing things. So in the same way, if we look at how people have considered time, and generally when I'm talking to people about the cycle, I start off like this. Look, there are those that think that everything started, first of all, with a Big Bang, which was like a point of energy which exploded. And everything since then, the whole universe started with a point. And that exploded, which we call the Big Bang. And this is about 14 billion years ago, according to their calculations. And in the first fractions of a second, most of the things were already, you know, at least in their incipient form. And then somehow or the other, there was one of those bits of the explosion was our own solar system. And one of those places in the solar system, through some magical arrangement of water and matter and whatever, and heat, somehow or the other, these single-celled bodies, these single-celled creatures called amoebas, somehow appeared, and they started to proliferate and sort of diversify, and you know, we get a tree of creatures, starting off with amoebas. And they call that the theory of evolution. Theory of evolution, not law of evolution. Because it's very difficult to prove. How I studied chemistry, for example, and it's very hard to imagine how inorganic chemistry, which has no carbon in it, right, became organic chemistry. The carbon's, you know, dancing around with the oxygens and the hydrogens and the nitrogens and so on to form organic life. Very difficult. It's unimaginable, actually. So the evolutionists say this, 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 and this, and, you know, the final stage of the evolutionary process is, you know, these things that we sit in called bodies, which would have had to have billions and zillions of adaptations from the amoeba. And so they say things, and then on the other side you have most religious traditions, especially the monotheistic traditions, the so-called Abrahamic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, believe in an all-powerful God. And in fact, this is the idea in many traditions. There was some powerful being in some magical way, in our case, let there be light, and there was light. You know, that's what the Christians and the Jews believe. And there was light, and you know, in 7 days, remembering the 7 days course, of course, in the 7 days God created the world. And so they are vehemently opposed to the idea of there not being any such thing as a soul or God, because the evolution theory is totally materialistic. You know, matter led to matter led to matter and led to matter, and even thinking and so on is just an electrochemical sort of reaction happening in our brains. The very top of evolution is the human brain. And so creationists believe that God created everything and us as well, and created the souls and created, you know, the monotheistic traditions go for that side. So they're completely incompatible, both ideas. Though, you could say that people have tried to blend everything together and say that, well, God appeared at a particular stage in the evolutionary process and sort of started to interact with things here. So, in fact, we don't need to get into that debate, because they say enough bad things about each other. And, you know, there are criticisms, very, very well researched criticisms on both sides. So let them fight it out. But we have a third explanation, which is just as valid, just as there are many therapies to treat the same thing. Let us present our idea, which is different from both these ideas. We say that God, souls and matter always exist, that reality is an interaction between those three forces, you could say. And this happens over a period of time which is cyclic. And so there are a number of things that we can, you know, use to back up that idea. First of all, there's something called biogenesis. It means that the forerunners, our forefathers, are the same sort of creatures as we are. So our parents were human beings, their parents were human beings, their parents were human beings. You will never get back to a time where someone's parent was a monkey. Neither will you get back to a time when someone's parent was a speck of dust. Or that, you know, human beings, through the genetic code, actually, they perpetuate themselves. And Baba says that the species are actually parallel to each other. They don't cross. So human beings, human souls always have human bodies. You'll never find a human soul going to a dog's body or a dog soul coming to a human body. They are just parallel lines, and they have their own roles and functions. And so this is a great thing to understand. And if you just think, just this one aspect, that human beings have always been around, and if you look at the population growth over time charts, and you'll see we've got 7 point something billion human beings now. And if you trace that time backwards, right, you'll get to a period of about 5,000 years ago when the population was less than a million, which is exactly what Baba says. Maybe one of the problems is that we think that the 5,000 years is 5,000 times the 12 months that just passed. Probably, and this is again, there's a lot of, let's say, speculation about destruction and creation. But Baba once said, don't make these useless calculations, you're wasting your time, like counting how many births there are in the Christians and the Muslims. You've heard that point in the Muli? Don't waste your time making... So I wasted my time making a stupid calculation. How much, if we go from 16 celestial degrees to 14, just in the Golden Age to the Silver Age, how much do we lose per day? So I sort of made the calculation, 0.004%. The decrease in, so it's absolutely negligible one day to the next, and then one month to the next. And so there's hardly, you know, nothing is being wasted, nothing is being rubbed up against. You know, nothing, you know, we're not sort of wasting ourselves and wasting matter and therefore wasting time. We're not wasting time. So the sense of time is probably longer than it is now. So a day in the Golden Age may not be the same as a day as we perceive it at the end of the Iron Age, just such a rush. You sort of jump out of bed, maybe not jump out of bed, sort of drag yourself out of bed, get up, and you never just in a blink of the eye you're tired and you're going back to sleep again, right? It seems what happened, you know, it's just like we're in October 2017, it's almost finished. So it seems hard to think that the cycle would be 5,000 times what has just passed in the last 12 months. What I'm saying is that time is probably relative to the speed in which we use it and waste it. Could be. But one of the things which is absolutely essential to understand and why things repeat, actually, is because every single thing has a configuration which is peculiar to it. So each atom has its own configuration that sort of, they move around. Carbons will always react in the presence of oxygen in a similar way. If you burn it up, it will make carbon dioxide, maybe some other gases too, depending on what's in the wood. But we have chemical elements react in similar ways because of their configuration. So souls have their own configuration, each one of us, each individual soul has a configuration which determines how it reacts with space and time and other souls. So our interaction is written into us. And that interaction happens over a period of time. We say, for example, we do make statements even in our talks, right, that we create our own reality. But the absoluteness of that affirmation is very, very deep. So I create my reality because that's the way I'm configured to do it. So I react with souls over time in a particular way. So in the Golden Age, you know, I'm still the same person that I was in the Golden Age. I'm exactly the same individual that I was in the Golden Age, but the way I came out from that original purity and power was different. My inclinations went this way, or my inclinations went that way. So all of us inclined differently and ended up where we are. And we're still trying to work it out, you know. It's like once I was in Iran, this was before all of the wars, and I was in a town having some tea in a cafe, you know, watching this cat catcher. There seemed to be a lot of cats in the town, and so the city cat catcher was out with a big bag, and a sort of a net with a, you know, on the end of a long stick, and he would grab the cats and stick him in the sack. You ever seen a cat in a sack? And then and you put another cat in the same sack, what do you think happens? Worse, no? So each of us are like cats in our different sacks, you know, trying to find our way out. So I'm in the one that I'm supposed to be in. I'm in the one that my configuration determined. Both my liberation and my prison are written into my configuration. And unless I have a very, very big perspective of things, I won't be able to understand who I am. Because to understand who I am, it also means to understand my context. And my context is something which is preordained. Where is it preordained? It's because it's written into me. It's my specification, you could say. These are my specifications, that I will be a soul that does this, this, and this, and this. By chance, our specification included the Golden Age. So congratulations, Golden Aged souls. It was in our part. It was in our part. And because my role, which is pre-configured, acts it out in the way that it does, and that includes interacting with others and interacting with matter, and also interacting with God, those three things, because that sort of unrolls from inside me, whatever's happening is actually unrolling from inside me. Because the film has already been shot, as Baba says, and time actually made more sense in the time that we had record players and records, right? Long play records. And so Baba would say that time is where the needle is. And what's already been played is still there, and what's going to be played is still there, but we're only aware of where the needle is on the record player. So it's going around and around, right? And everything that's coming up, you know, is part of a drama that's sort of recorded inside me. And because we act individually and we are locked into our own parts, I cannot be someone else. I have to understand who I am. And every single soul has their own parts. I can't control anyone else's part. Sometimes I maybe would like to. Why aren't you like this? Or why are you like that? You know? It's their part. It's their part to be irritable, or their part to be stupid, or their part to be, you know, clear. It's written into their configuration, you know. So both the story of victory and the story of defeat are written into us. Now, the thing is, how can I make victory more prominent and defeat chased away, at least until next cycle? It really depends on power and understanding, jnana yoga. That's why Baba has his part also. And his part is to help those souls who wish to become powerful and knowledgeable about things. That we know what Baba knows, you know, and we could be at least temporarily, as powerful as Baba is. Just for a little while, you know. 1 second of our original state and I'm like Baba for a second. So these are like, you know, quite incredible things, you know. And the fact that Baba says everything passes through the stages of Sato, Raju and Tamo. And we write that into our Morley books. Oh, that sounds nice. That sounds... You think about the implications of that. Everything moves together. Sato means clear, pure, light, powerful. Raja means dynamic, moving. You know, if we think a lot, definitely we have a Raja stage. If we think a lot and don't get anywhere, definitely Raja. If we, you know, even the whole thing of Sato, Raja and Tamo are connected with food and what we do and what we connect with. You know, I can be just stimulating. If let's say you prepare food with just taste in mind, oh, this will taste very nice. Right? Even though the ingredients are sattvic, if you're just thinking about the taste, you're making that food rajasic. And you may be serving rajasic food in your center. Oh, people will love this. What's the favorite topic at meal times? In our centers, recipes. Oh, that's nice. What did you put in that? You know. But so where am I in that sort of consideration? So if souls are sattva-pradhan, then the matter, Baba says, as are the souls, so is the furniture, right? So the all of the way the golden age is, certainly we were talking about heaven on earth, how Diwali is, it will be, you know, it sort of does not compare to how heaven is, to tell the truth. Most of the images that we try to reproduce of heaven, even in our museums and so on, are extremely grotesque compared to how the beauty of the Golden Age really is. Because Baba says there are no artists who can show how beautiful things were. Even our bodies were not so dense. Matter is light. Baba once said, gold is light. Now, that's a profound statement for someone who studied chemistry. If one of the heavy metals is light, how light is everything else? So our bodies and our references are all connected with hell. There's no references of heaven anymore that we can think about. So this idea of Sato, Raja, Tamo is actually the best expression of what is called entropy. Now, entropy is not exactly the law that makes things as we lose power. It's actually the measure of the loss of power. It's the measure of the loss of energy of a system. That's what entropy is. So entropy increases. It means the measure of the loss of energy is increasing. It's getting more and more and more and more. So we go through this cycle and the soul is just using up its own power over time. And it's not replenishing that power, ever. So that's why no matter what we do, pilgrimages, scriptures, charity, all of those things, they don't work because they do not replenish the energy that the soul is losing through its just through its interaction with others and with matter. So Baba's role is to give us back that power. So that should be the number one priority. Everything else is less important than the soul recovering its lost power. Because if I am more powerful, the world in which I interact would change. My reality will be different. If I'm more powerful, things will reorganize themselves differently around me. So I do not need to, you know, be a slave of karmic accounts if I'm powerful. Karmic accounts, whether it's work or family, you know, some of us have hard jobs, you know, long hours and earning not so much maybe. If we had freedom, true freedom, probably we would be just doing Baba's service. Is that right? So there we are, slaving away because we don't have, our karmic situation has more power than we do. Now the karmic situation is the result of the accumulation over many births, the things that have not been sorted out karmically. I'm surrounded by them, so, you know, a lot of them are also Brahmins. We've spent many lives together, right? So the people around us are probably exactly the ones that we have to learn from. And these are some of the secrets, you know. So if you look, if you have a panoramic vision of things, everything is accurate. I'm in this situation with these people, and this person is creating these sorts of problems so that I can learn this sort of thing. So that's, you know, we can understand and appreciate people better if we have a panoramic vision of things. That's exactly why, oh, it's because of that that you are here with me in this situation. We should be more appreciative of the people around us. And because everyone understands these things differently, some immediately understand that the main priority is to become powerful spiritually and everything else will look after itself, literally. Because if I have more spiritual power, more clarity, I will understand exactly why I have to be doing what I'm doing. And then it becomes, you know, two things. By understanding whatever's around me and therefore accepting it totally, also because there's clarity in spiritual power, I will naturally have the capacity to control my thinking. So there is neither, you know, the false pressure of unreal thinking, nor the real pressure of situations that I have to work out, because I can diminish them by understanding them, and I can diminish the unreal things by controlling my thinking. Then I can position myself completely differently to the people and the things around me in my life. So I don't need to, you know, it's sometimes because I live in a center and I work with people that live in centers and also those that don't. Some people are understanding that they don't need to be slaves of their karmic situation, that they can be more powerful, and they can reorder their living through understanding and through spiritual power. Whereas others, they just sort of, this is what I have to do. You know, day after day, month after month, you know, slaving away, the same karmic bondage, the same health problem, the same difficult work, or the same problem with other Brahmins even. I don't need to, I can reorder all of that if I understand things. And if I really, because I don't know what my part, my full part will be, I can be anyone, anything. There's nothing that says that I cannot put a full stop on everything and all of my inconsistencies and maybe stupidity that I've been cultivating until now. There's nothing that doesn't say I can put a full stop on that, finish, and I can start another panorama in front of me. But, you know, if I just follow, if I just do what I've always done, I always get to what I've always got to. The results will be the same. If I continue doing exactly what I'm doing now, I will still continue bashing my head against walls without much progress. And I mean, it's if we could really see, like Baba says, I have my television set here in the subtle regions, and I watch the amusing games of the children, you know, as they go through their stuff, these cats struggling in their bags, right? It's a good image, isn't it? And you know, that's what creates my number. You know, the number. And Baba uses the word pad in Hindi, and we translate it into English and other languages as status. It's not status as we understand it, it's a number. It's my position in the scheme of things. My position in the scheme of things is my status. So each one is creating his or her own status by however much we understand, you know, these great truths. If everything is recorded in us individually, and when we come together, our collective truth happens, collective settlement, when souls having similar sanskars go through the same sort of situation like a hurricane or an earthquake, there's some settling between souls and matter going on. Or 100 people sort of turn up to get onto the same plane that crashes, and there are people on the waiting list who somehow didn't get on. It wasn't their time, right? We can understand that. When we see the incredible flow of events, this incredible chaos, actually chaos is an extreme level of order. Because there are lots and lots of little things being sorted out between souls and other souls, between souls and matter. You know, all consequences of lack of power and lack of understanding. You know, people are sad because they are ignorant. If I am sad, if I lose happiness because I've become stupid again. Because there's something that's happened that I'm not understanding. Yeah? So when we say nothing is new, that should be a sort of a thrill of every moment, rather than something we only say when something's gone wrong. Oh, nothing new. Drama. Like drama, the word drama comes out with a bit of a shake to it. Drama. But what it means is that what was in the role of the soul manifested itself, you know. You think that you go to places, right? But actually, because of what you are, the places come to you. Maybe we don't even move. everything just changes around us. So how stable can I be if I understand that internally I do not move? I'm in the same place. It's a different dimension. The avyak state is a state which does not move. And that's why we can, you know, just watch this wonderful drama going on, this incredible holographic universe, you know, where things are in, everything has a, the specifications are such that determine that this form is sitting in that, occupying that particular space for those particular moments. Isn't that great? It's sort of, and then you see people moving around and doing things and saying things, taking it seriously, right? Thinking that this is it and this is the only thing. But if we step back a bit, it's so wonderful. Drama is wonderful. Even if I drove down to Shantivan this afternoon. Actually, at lunchtime, I had lunch with nearby with Eric. Driving down the mountain is quite an interesting experience if you've ever done it. But it's like, you know, a flow of, you know, people rushing and trying to overtake each other and forgetting how beautiful it is, the nature, and, you know, we were just sort of going along nicely and enjoying the scenery. You know, it's incredible how people become impatient because of how serious they take something, that they lose this stage because something has to happen, but they actually lose more than their stage. They lose their power, right? And they become closed in again. If I lose my power, I become enclosed once again. If I develop power, I start to blossom, I start to break out, you know, and I start to see things differently. And that's why it's possible to be trapped in your own role as well, which is probably the biggest of all prisons, to be trapped in your own role, that I have to do this because I'm so-and-so. You know, and we see things like this even in our BK world, you know, people so role conscious that, you know, I am this one, I'm in charge of the center, I don't like you so I won't give you any chances. Come on, I'm free, I'm a free agent. Even Baba says I can go anywhere. So if there's someone trying to control me, it's also my fault because I'm allowing it to happen. Don't allow anyone except Baba to control you. So I have to be free. It's, you know, our essential existential frustration is because we are free, but we're not experiencing freedom. I am, you know, like a piece of styrofoam, you know, the foam they make the floats out of for water, you know, that white stuff. If you have a piece of that tied to the bottom of the swimming pool, It wants to float, right? Of course, its nature is light, will float. If it wasn't tied to the bottom of the pool, it would float. So what happens is that we give more attention to the things that hold us and less attention to the things that make us free naturally. So if I invested in my lightness, I would float. I would float above everything, naturally. As a soul, I am light. I don't have to become light. It's like people when they drown, it's not the body actually floats, right? Because the blood and other things is lighter than water. You know, the fats in the body are all lighter than water. So if you just hold your breath and sort of stay there, you would float, right? But people don't believe that they can float, and they start to struggle in the water, and they fill their lungs up with water, and they drown. So the soul is light. I do not need to make efforts to become a soul. I do not need to make efforts to become Baba's child. I don't need to make efforts to be peaceful. I don't need to make efforts to be happy and light. I am. But I've forgotten that. And I'm giving more attention to things that prevent me from experiencing that, rather than to the natural qualities of the soul. So how free could I be? Each one of us here, think of your own situation, you know, difficult relationship with someone or something, maybe health problem, maybe financial difficulties, whatever. You know, whatever you've arranged around yourself, you can rearrange by understanding through developing power. Because I'm saying to my reality, recognize me, the powerful soul, the child of God. Instead of saying to my reality, things are difficult, I can't do it, I can't see my way out of things, somebody help me, you know. It's because I haven't understand my own self. To understand myself, I had to understand myself over time. The original sanskars and what's happened to them in my own peculiar way, what happened to my original sanskars, my brand of what happened to them, is where I've ended up. You know, the sorts of doubts that I have, the sorts of vices that still are lurking around, the sorts of situations that seem to repeat, all of that, it's something that's happened to me over time and something I can correct. This whole idea of I am what I will be, it's a hard thing to sort of digest, you know. Hum, so, so, hum. I will be what I was. But also I am what I've always been. I am, you know, the verb tense of eternity is the present tense. It's not I will be peaceful or I will be happy. When I get this and this and this finished, when I go, you know, when I am able to get this particular thing happening in my center, when this happens and when that happens, I will be, you know, that's the human way of thinking. Because happiness is not a future event, it's a present state. It's my present. I am happy. Everything else is not real. That's why they say Maya. When people come to our retreats, and you know, we've got several retreat centers in Brazil, four of them actually. Always in the retreats, the people say on the Sunday, this is fantastic, but what's it going to be like when we get back to our reality tomorrow on Monday? And we say to them that this is your reality. Monday is not the reality. Whatever you've invested in, whatever you think is important, is less important than you becoming powerful and having the understanding of things. Of course, the thing is we have to look after our creation, right? Whatever it is. But we should look after it from a position of power, spiritual power, and a position of understanding, and not a position of slavery and sort of bowing down to things. That's not, you know, that we'll probably, instead of gaining power, I'll probably lose power. It really is about how I position myself. According to the world that's formed itself around me, you know. So just think of the condition of your relationships. They're just expressions of your own complaints or your own understanding. It depends. If you complain a lot about others, they'll probably continue to behave like you think they should. They will justify, you know, your complaint. So if you complain about people, you're actually giving power to that complaining reality. Yeah. So you lock yourself into a situation where you complain and the people continue to behave in the way that you complain about them. Maybe they don't behave that way with other people. Maybe it's just you locked into that sort of interaction. I've seen it, you know. I remember one sister, she was really suffering under the centre in charge of a particular place. And the centre in charge was always saying, this one, no, it's useless, this one is stupid, this one is always. Something useless or stupid would happen in her presence. Finally, she got the courage to go somewhere else. And under that other situation, the person was so loving and caring that brought out the best in her. She was never stupid or, useless in the other situation. So you think about it. By repeating our thinking to ourselves about the people around us and the things around us, we are perpetuating us. We are perpetuating that sort of situation. And you can change it by changing your mental position. Wait a minute. I am an eternal soul. I am with Baba. I have his power. This that's happening has happened like this every cycle until the moment that I decided to change. I changed last cycle. Everything changed. I was victorious last time. You know, we had a very difficult situation recently in Brazil where really needs some legal and financial help. You know, there was a bit of a knot in everything. So we have an internal auditing team, some lawyers and accountants who went there to give a hand. But I told the team, the situation that you're going to find there is exactly the same one that you found last cycle. And it was exactly the same one that you sorted out with your competence. Don't you remember? And they did. Otherwise you go, oh my God, look at this situation. What are we going to do? Right? I was victorious last time. Right? You're not saying that with much conviction. I was victorious last time, right?
Yes.
Stronger than that. Yes.
Yes.
So let's have, is anyone, I don't know, anyone got any questions? Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I can repeat the question. I mentioned about someone working under someone was not really, you know, useful and doing all sorts of crazy things. And because of the person who was working with her thought that, and it just perpetuated itself until she changed and went somewhere else and suddenly under a different sort of care and development, she was able to bring herself out. Of course, it's a karmic account. But within karmic accounts, I can decide whether I want to continue like this or whether I want to change. I can decide. Does my karmic account control me? Or do I control my karmic account? This is the main question. Does I control my creation? Does my creation control me? You see, there's always two sides to any relationship. Let's say there's a dominant person, a sort of a submissive person. Often that's the case, right? The dominant one and the submissive one. But, there, you know, if there's problems, because of both sides, right? The dominant one thinks that they can get away with it forever being dominant, which is it's a complete fallacy. You'll have to pay for that as well. And the other one thinks that they can cope just by being submissive all the time and, you know, bowing down to that dominance and suffering. That also has its price. So both of them will pay the price. Until one of them suddenly realizes, why are we playing this game? Why are we playing such a game? So it really requires one of them to understand that, and maybe the other one stays suffering, one of them continues, okay, finish, let me go. I'm free, I'm a free bird. I'm light, I'm Baba's child. Everything is fine, let me go. That's the basic human right, isn't it? Okay.
I have a question. Just now you mentioned that the avyak stage is a stage that does not move. Can you explain that a bit?
Okay. There's a state inside of us. You see, where is the subtle region? Where is it? Where? Show me. So if I create a subtle stage, which is a different dimension of things, where there's no rushing and no going here and there, so I have a sense that things happen around me rather than me running from one place to the other. Like if I go from here to the dining area after the class, I can be rushing towards there because I'm hungry, right? And I'm wondering if the chips are better than last night. Or I can be just flowing along, internally very still. That's what I meant by not moving, still, stillness. Internally very still, and you know, this same drama that happened last cycle is forming around me, you know. It's a different state of consciousness. When you're going somewhere rushing and thinking about what's going to happen there and not being present, losing, in fact, I saw a study that showed that the only human beings who are 100% present are young babies. No. 6-month-old babies. Pardon?
Humans doing that, we're silly.
They're 100% present. They don't even know where their hand finishes and where the crib starts. Where their mother finger, where their finger finishes and their mother fingers start. So it's all one thing. Then we start to divide and differentiate as ego sort of raises its ugly head. And by the time we're four, we're only 80% present. By eight, we are 60% present. When we are 14, we are 40% present. When we are 18, 20% present. And when we're adults, 3% of the time we are present. This is a problem because peace, love and happiness are present things. I can remember I was happy yesterday, but I can't reproduce the happiness. Happiness is now. So if I'm walking around in a now sort of experience and just appreciating the beauty of each moment as it unfolds, internally I'm still, everything else is changing around me. So I'm not rushing anywhere, you know. This is, I think, must be a problem for the organizers of the programs here. What's going to happen next? And then what's going to happen? And then what's going to happen? And if this? And if that? No, no, no. You know, you lose your sense of reality in that way. Because nothing in that rushing mentality is real. So, victorious? Okay. Okay, Om Shanti.